T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Good vibes, Ben.
Afternoons on the Score.
3-1 from Perth, Australia. He's bounced around and he's been a closer and a good one for a lot of years.
Shake two.
Going over the signs with Zunino.
You're mic'd up. No, it's not working.
Oh, really?
I haven't heard a thing.
What
already.
Do you want to do?
Chase two, shake the same.
Okay.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
I hear you, Liam.
That was all clean, man. All clean. It's the most dangerous snake ever.
Oh,
that's...
God. Yeah. Yeah. That's my only Australian trick that I have.
Watch out for those stingrays.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine? You go your whole life,
like
tackling things with giant teeth that could kill you in a second.
Right.
And the thing that gets you is the thing that you're allowed to pet at the zoo.
Well, and it seems right. It seems actually fitting that Steve Irwin was killed by one of those animals. This is the Parkins and Spiegel Show. Mark Grody and Chris Ranji filling in. We are standing by for White Sox closer Liam Hendricks. He is scheduled to join us right now, as a matter of fact. So we are standing by waiting for him to call in, which hopefully he will do in very short order. He, like I said, like Liam Hendricks is one of those guys in the bullpen who has definitely lived up. It's always nice, Ranji, when you sign a guy for relatively big dollars for multiple years that pretty much exactly lives up to the contract, because it is, as most sports fans know, a relative rarity when that happens. And I am being told that he is ready to join us now. So Liam Hendricks joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's going on, Liam Hendricks? How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourself?
We are doing very well. How was everything? How was the rush of the All-Star game and then the subsequent break after that?
Yeah, it was great. Obviously, being in Colorado and me suffering from altitude sickness was a lot of fun. But other than that, I had a good time. My wife loved the red carpet. She was a big fan of that one. And then she wore a power suit, so she was able to establish her little sense of style out there as well.
Has she enjoyed all the attention that you have received because of the conversation that you had with Joe Buck, I guess we could call it?
Yeah, I mean, it was one-sided because I legit couldn't hear him. The volume was too far down. Like, I didn't know that if I was live. I didn't know what was going on. So I just played it as a normal inning instead. And, yeah, she's mastered the eye roll right now. So. Yeah, so she's getting exasperated by a lot of it, but at the end of the day, she understands it. She can tell other people, no, this is how he actually acts on the field at all times. So this is a glimpse into the life of.
See, Liam, I know that you're a pretty smart dude, and my thinking was he's doing this on purpose. He's pretending like he can't hear anybody because he knows this is going to be great, and it's going to be great television, and it totally was. So we are right now in a forum that this is all about trust. So you can tell us, could you honest to God not hear Joe Buck?
No, I honest to God couldn't hear him. I think I would have been a lot funnier and a lot less crass if I could have. And I would have been much more descriptive. Obviously, the first pitch to Ozzie Albies was a knuckleball. I would have probably portrayed the fact of, hey, guys, watch the knuckleball. I would have said some things along those lines coming in, but and yeah, I mean, I think it would have been a little bit funnier, but a lot less real, maybe.
Well, can you, Liam, can you even pitch without swearing? I want to know if you're capable of that.
Very rarely does it happen. And it's usually when I'm very, 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 very locked in and haven't overthrown a pitch at all. It doesn't happen very often, but there has been occasions where it has happened. It's like a blue moon.
So Jake Peavy used to pitch for the White Sox years ago, and he was known for the exact same thing, except the versions of what he said was a lot cleaner. Like he would say, "Dadgummit," or he would say, "God bless it." Have you ever thought about going that direction?
Ned Flanders?
I have, but that seems anti-Australian, to be honest.
I mean, yeah.
So I actually made my debut against Peavy. He does the same thing in the bullpen. And so it's, this is back in 2011, so a while back now. But, yeah, I think I've looked into that, but it's less authentic.
Talking to Liam Hendricks, White Sox closer here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, along with Chris Ranji. I'm Mark Grody, and we've been talking about your bullpen a little bit, Liam, and the fact that maybe, you know, you have definitely lived up to the billing, but maybe some of the other guys have not. Do you guys need more help in your bullpen to get to where you guys want to go, and that's obviously winning a World Series?
I think the guys we have out there are definitely capable. I don't think anybody has quite lived up to their own expectations, including myself. I think we've all gone to a point where we've had good stretches and we've had tough stretches. And I still believe, honestly, to this day that the guys we have out there are capable of getting it done in no matter what situation ever. But, I mean, for me, selfishly, I'd like a little bit of extra, like, veteran leadership out there just so it's – because let's be honest, I'm not really a veteran. I am way too jovial and – I don't consider myself a veteran at all, so it's like someone needs to rein me in most of the time. So, having a nice veteran guy out there I think would be great, just to be able to kind of go through some guys. The guys have been through some things, but I don't think we necessarily need a huge overhaul or a piece here and there. I think we've got the guys capable of doing it. It's just now kind of tapping into that and making sure that we all run fluidly at the same time.
Well, you've been in a number of bullpens over the years, different teams, different bullpens on the same team. What is this one like in terms of personality and in terms of ability compared to what you have been used to?
As a straight talent level, I don't think I've been in a bullpen with more talent. I've been in some very veteran bullpens. I've been in some this is probably the greenest bullpen I've ever been a part of. But the personalities out there mesh very well with each other. We're able to joke around. We're able to do this. It's just that it's the knowledge of being able to overcome the humps. That is one of the biggest things that we had a bunch of guys do really well in the 60-game season last year. And then moving forward, it's hard to replicate a 60-game season over 162. And getting that kind of settled down and the fact that it doesn't actually matter, just go out there and pitch your game. That's the biggest thing that we're trying to get through to some of the younger guys of, it's not necessarily, oh, well, they're hitting me, so I need to change. It's no, you just need to have that confidence back in yourself, because when you have conviction and confidence behind a pitch, you're going to do a lot better than when you don't.
Liam, I want to go back to a word that you used about yourself being too jovial to be the guy who is sort of the leader of the bullpen. And I love that, because I think you're talking to two guys right now in Chris Ranji and Mark Grody that we don't really like to have a lot of responsibility in life either. Is that kind of what it is, man? Like you just want to do your thing, go out there, be a stud closer, but not have to be responsible for anybody.
I don't mind the responsibility. I like being able to – certain guys play into this well. Certain guys are able to kind of flick the switch between having fun and joking around and then flipping the switch to being, okay, now I'm the best that there ever was and I'm going to pretty much annihilate the other team. But certain guys don't react well to that. And you need that kind of yin and yang kind of personality where some guys need to be locked in and they're maybe a little bit nervous throughout the course of the game, where me joking around and doing this isn't the best thing for them. But someone who is a little bit more stoic, who's a little bit more analytical, is going to be a little bit more, have a better effect on them. So I don't think it's necessarily the fact that I don't want the responsibility. I think it's more along the fact that not everybody plays into my certain kind of attitude towards life. that that some people may or may not agree with. But no, I want the responsibility of making sure that this is a pen that I'm going to be proud of no matter what happens, regardless of results, regardless of anything like that. These guys out there, they're going to grow with the game. They're going to be better. And it's just a matter of getting that through to them. Like, this isn't a struggle that is going to define your career. This is a blip in the radar of a long and healthy career.
Liam, how has this team been able to stay 8 games up and have a pretty significant lead at this point of the season, despite all the injuries that you've dealt with?
Pretty much we just yell at each other. That's mainly it. I think there's no one walks into this clubhouse and is scared of making a mistake, because it doesn't change people's opinions of them. We're going to just yell at you no matter what. Even if you do well, if you do badly, it doesn't matter. Our opinion never changes. The way we look towards you never changes. The way that guys, like, there's not going to be anyone tiptoeing around you if you have a bad game or anything like that. They're going to say it to your face. And you learn really quickly that you have a bad game, it doesn't matter. Just pick it up tomorrow and let's get better tomorrow. And then I think that's been one of the bigger things that guys have learned was, I can have a bad game. I can have a stretch of bad games. They're not going to treat me any different as if I'm a pariah or I can't be around them. It's just a matter of, okay, I have a bad game. So what? You know what happens tomorrow? I'm going to have a good game. And then you go at it, and that's what seems to be happening this year.
So can you do that quickly? Can you compartmentalize? I mean, you did have – you gave up a home run in the final game against Baltimore in the final game of that series. Are you walk off the mound, are you pissed, or does it go away really quickly? How do you deal with that personally?
Oh, I'm definitely pissed. But then I made a joke of the fact that I was trying to make everybody else late for their flights. So, and then I spoke to Trey Mancini at the home run derby. I was like, no, this is all the plan. I'm trying to get you locked in. And I mean, he got to the final, so there's that. So something must have worked. But usually I give myself that night. So if it's a day game, I'll give myself till I get back to the hotel or the room or my house. And then I'll watch the broadcast, both sides. And then I kind of, from there, I may stew on a little bit overnight. But when I wake up the next day, it's gone. It doesn't matter anymore. There's nothing I can do to change it. All I can do is move forward.
You know, there's an idea in bullpen that's been around for a while now, and that idea is your closer shouldn't always primarily pitch in the ninth inning. That if maybe the game situation is in the eighth or even in the seventh inning, if there's a, you know, you're facing 3, 4, and 5 in the order, that's the most important time to use your closer, you know, your best reliever. Do you think that's generally a good idea, or do you feel like you have to have that ninth inning and know it's the ninth inning? Because I know people are creatures of habit when it comes to that.
I don't necessarily need the ninth inning, but I still believe that it doesn't matter who's coming up in the seventh or the eighth or the ninth. The ninth inning, the three outs and the ninth are the hardest ones to get, regardless of if it's 7, 8, 9 or if it's 2, 3, 4. It doesn't matter. For whatever reason, those last three outs, it just comes down to the fact that sometimes the opposition just can smell it, they can sniff it, whatever it is, I have no idea. But those three outs at the end of the game tend to be a lot harder. But I couldn't care less which inning I pitched. If their matchups come in and I'm ready, like they need me in the seventh, I'll be ready in the seventh. They need me in the sixth, I'll be ready in the sixth. It doesn't matter. I just want to pitch. So I just wait down there and wait for the phone to ring. And as soon as the phone rings, I get it going no matter what.
That's White Sox closer Liam Hendricks joining us here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You guys hosting the Houston Astros tonight, a team which unfortunately for you guys swept you guys in 4 games in June. You guys were outscored 27-8. You guys feel that? I mean, will that be something that will be in your heads tonight?
Oh, I don't care. I mean, congratulations, you swept us in June. Who gives a shit? To be honest, I mean, at the end of the day, you move forward. I don't care what a series was before it, because at the end of the day, I don't think, like, I was with the A's last year. I don't think we lost a series. I think it was like 10-1 or however much it was against the Astros, and then they came and whooped our ass in the ALCS or the ALDS. So it doesn't matter. The biggest thing that matters for us now is taking advantage of trying to go out there and win a division. I don't care who we're playing. I don't care the fact that if we beat up on teams sub 500 and whatever it is, as long as we're hot when we get to October and hopefully we're able to clinch a division, hopefully we're able to kind of get there. But that's the biggest thing, is as long as we're hot at the end of the season, that's all that matters to me.
By the way, this is not Joe Buck, so you can't, and your earpiece is working fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I knew it.
I think it would have been interesting to see what they would have said or how they would just try to disguise it if I could hear them or anything like that. But it would have been interesting talking to old Smoltzy while I'm cussing up a storm on the mound.
I'm sure that Smoltzy would have, or maybe did actually appreciate what was going on.
Oh, I'm
there.
Sure, yeah.
Well, I was talking to Peter Moylan, who now does some stuff with John Boy Media, and he just told me, don't ever change. I'm like, I'd much prefer to be myself and be interesting rather than tone it down and be PG. It's just, what's the fun in that? I mean, you may as well be yourself. I mean, there's too many people in this game. Like, when I came up, there was, you had to be stoic. You had to be kind of against all the emotion. You had to remain calm and you had to do this. It was like, no, screw it. The whole adage of let the kids play is fantastic. I mean, let the emotions fly. If I yell at you and you backflip to the moon, like if I yell at you as striking out and the next day you get me for a homer, throw the bat to the moon. I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all. But don't get pissed at me when I scream at you. It's just, it goes both ways.
Do you think that baseball is moving fast enough in that direction? Like, I mean, are players accepting it more and more?
They are until it affects them. I think it's one of those things where it's a lot of the time it's like, let it play. And then all of a sudden, if I'm yelling at someone who's been backflipping the entire year, then they get pissed. It's like, it goes both ways. You can't have it. You can't do it yourself and then not expect me to do it. Same reason as if a guy hits a home run on me, I don't care if you throw it over the netting, except for the fact it's pretty dangerous for fans. Don't do that. But just things like that, I don't care. Like, show your emotions, let it fly. This game is, that's the way we're going to target younger people, is letting our emotions out, letting our character out, letting people see behind the curtain and see that we're actual people, not bloody robots running around.
That's awesome, man. I love hearing that. With whom did you have had the best shouting match ever?
Oh, I don't know. There's been a few that I still remember a specific event, and it wasn't against, like, it was against the Mariners, and it was last year. It was I was facing Carl Seager, and I can't remember. I think it was the second batter. I struck out the first guy, then Adam screamed naturally, and then I got him up and I got him 2-0, and then their dugout started yelling. Not Kyle specifically. Kyle's one of the nicest guys ever.
Okay.
Their dugout started chirping a little bit. And so I got back and then get to 3-1, and he pulls a ball that went 9,000 feet foul, but it was hit very well. And their dugout started chirping a little bit. And knowing me, I just decided to chirp back and then kind of gave him a little shrug off with the hand. And then struck him out at the end of that at bat, and then just decided to look into their dugout and scream a little bit. That was good. The next day when I gave up 2 runs in the 10th inning, that wasn't good. But look, it's part and parcel of the way things go. It's not always going to work out, but I'm not going to change no matter what the situation relies. And I need to psych myself up. If it's a 5-run game, if it's a 1-run game, if it's a 10-run game, I need to go out there and make sure that I don't – like, my goal is to not let anybody score, regardless of the score. Regardless of what the game situation is, my goal is to not let anybody score. And if someone scores, I'm going to be mad.
I love it. That's great. That is so great. Liam, I think you've got to get running, right? So
I got to get stretched here in a little bit.
Yeah, you go stretch. You get ready for the ball game tonight and see if you can get a win.
I'll take a save over a win, but as a team, we want the win.
Liam, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate when you do come on here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Good luck tonight, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You got it. That is White Sox closer Liam Hendricks. Ronji, did he? I don't think he even knew that he swore, because I made the joke.
He didn't.
I made the Joe Buck joke, and he just kind of flowed with it and was going right back to it. So
it's great. Look, you know, here's what I love about him. He mentioned it. He said this, like, it's real. You know, he's not softening anything. He just is who he is, and he lets that happen. And I wish more players, more people in general, just were like that. You know, not putting on airs or anything. Just be you. And the game is more entertaining that way. And that is a dude, and I do believe that we are getting closer and closer to being in a better spot in Major League Baseball. There are some players who get it. And there are a lot more who get it now than who got it 3 years ago. But that dude is one of them, Liam Hendricks gets it. He understands what is attractive about baseball, or what can be.
I agree with you. And I would love to have that guy on the radio every single day to talk about that and hear that speech and play back what we just did with him. But I don't think it's possible for, like, in terms of human nature and competing at the highest level, for everybody to be like that, to bat flip over the net, to, you know, shout at you. I think it's very unique circumstances, a unique personality that can handle that. And I don't think that's anything, because we always rip baseball players and athletes for not being fun and taking things too seriously. But I think that's a really tough trick to turn, to actually be like that and allow your personality to flow when things are so serious. And quite frankly, and we always talk about, oh, it's sports, it's fun. It's very stressful. For these guys, right? So I'd love it if everybody was like that, but I just don't think it's realistic. And sometimes I think we're a little too hard on guys for not being more like that, as great as it is.
Well, first of all, it is stressful because you're doing a job in front of 30, 40,000 people, and then all the people watching on TV, and also it is your livelihood. So there is inherent stress in all of that. And I'm not saying everybody should bat flip or everybody should scream after a strikeout. But what I'm saying is, if that's what you want to be, you shouldn't feel like you got to button up, because that's not the way it's done in baseball. Like if you hit a home run and your instinct is to take that bat and throw it into the outfield, but you're like, I can't do that because I got to put my head down and run, because people want me to put my head down and run. Like, that's the stuff we got to get rid of. I don't think it would even be fun, honestly. It would be too much to me if every single player always bat flipped and always screamed after every single thing. Be who you are. That's the point. I just want people to be comfortable, players to be comfortable being who they are and what they want to be. That's it.
Yeah, and I think it'll get there someday. I don't think it's going to be in either of our lifetimes, believe it or not, or maybe it will. Maybe it's 10, 20 years down the road.
Brody,
you
and I will be in the home and it'll happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we'll
you
be
mean
in the facility.
Like the facility. I thought you meant the house and the family that you and I are going to build together.
Oh, well, we'll start there. And then baseball is going to get closer, and then one of us is going to end up in a care facility.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about this, because I heard on the radio today, I think it was maybe Mullion Hall. I don't remember, but they were talking about how they're going to do Score House again. So Score House next year, I'm talking about. It could return, assuming everything is cool and it's healthy and there's not another strand, that there'll be Score House again. I think that because we've now talked about this twice on the radio, this time and months ago, about you and I getting a house together and starting a family, maybe Mitch Rosen needs to put together the Ronji Grody
Score House.
Yeah, the Ronji and Grody house, where it's just you and I.
Yes, I agree.
In a mansion for like a week, and we see what we can make. Like, we make friends, you know what I'm saying? And we throw parties, and, you know, we invite people over, and the Ronji Grody house, or the Grody, however you want to break it down. What say you about that?
I agree, and I'm wondering if we do it like this. Like, when Score House happens, there's one house for everybody else, and then there's like we're in the guest house, or we are
in the garage. You know, like,
there's a coach house for you and me
with a bunk bed,
just one. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. And we're just up telling stories of Illinois State at night.
So, yeah, it's got to be like a dorm room. You guys are just in a dorm room.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We'll bring in the tiny little refrigerator and the horrible mattresses.
You have to have a beanbag chair.
Yeah. And we'll put some stupid posters up. Oh, man. Yep. This is something. I think this is happening.
I don't think it is, but I'm very excited about the idea.
Yeah. The idea is
it
fun.
Free? If it's free, it'll happen. But if it's not free, I don't think we're going to get what we want.
Their house will be in Arizona. Ours will be in Elgin or something. You know? Like, let's send them to like a farm.
No, go down to Bloomington. Just
for
a week.
Perfect.
Oh, my God. Grody, what if they put us up in like one of the new apartment buildings down there?
Oh, perfect. That's right. Because the dorm, they've taken down all the dorms, haven't they? Or people?
I don't know.
Something like that. Like, most of the kids stay in apartments these days.
We could be in Watterson Tower.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because it's like they're like quadrants or whatever they call them there. Studs, by the way, Just in recapping our interview with Liam Hendricks, which I thought went very well, how did we do on the delay? I mean, that was probably a treat for people listening on Odyssey, but how'd you do? What was your emotions as that went down?
Well, when anyone swears on air, the person on board's blood pressure immediately goes up, way up. So that happened, but I got it. I caught it.
I saw you rush to the button.
Immediately after he said it, I clipped it. So
I know we have to get to break, but in my old job in St. Louis, there was a really great dude, Chris Duncan, who used to play for the Cardinals. Dave Duncan, the pitching coach, his son.
Okay.
And he passed away, I guess, about a year ago.
I'm sorry, Chris.
He had cancer. But yeah, great dude. But he, I guess when he first started, and this was way before I did, there was it, and he was on the midday show for a few years, and I guess when he first started, he said, "Oh blank" about something, and then they're like, "Oh, you can't say that," and then he realized he said it. And he was like, "Oh blank," he said it again. so
that's awesome.
And so they caught the delay, uh-huh. the dump button. They caught the first one. They didn't get the second. So apparently, you can install a double dump.
Yeah, we have two.
We do have two? Okay, yeah, I didn't know that.
When we're on a 14-second delay, so the first time I hit it, it dumps 7 seconds.
The second time,
it dumps the next seven.
Yeah.
So
but they had
after
to, they
that
had
amount,
to
though.
Yeah, because of Chris Duncan, they had to install the double dump because the guy, he said a bad word, he realized he said it, and then he said it again because he realized he said the first one. And they can only catch one. But at least for us, Liam Hendricks only said it once.
Yeah, he did. That was it. And now we have a bleep. And bleeps always sound cool on the radio.
I think they're great.
We do have to take a break. We've got Stone coming. That's all good, man. Steve Stone coming up at 4 o'clock. White Sox broadcaster, of course. So we'll talk to Stoney more about the White Sox a little bit later on. When we return, let's talk about the Cubs and their trade as we stand by for other potential deals. And when I say their trade, I'm talking about the one that went down yesterday with Jock Peterson going to Atlanta for the minor league first baseman Bryce Ball. We'll tell you what that means and look ahead to what might happen as well for the Chicago Cubs. This is the Parkins and Spiegel Show with Grody and Ranji on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Congratulations, you swept this in June. Who gives
Yes, Liam.
Yes. Yeah. That was awesome. White Sox closer Liam Hendricks on the Score a little bit earlier with me, Mark Grody, and him, Chris Ranji. And it's pretty funny that everybody on this show right now, except for you, Ranji, has a dump button. Adam Studzinski, our producer, has a dump button. I just learned that over here on my side of the glass in the talent studio, as it's called, I have a dump button as well.
Well, hold on.
Yeah.
You just learned this?
Yeah, I guess I never really know.
You're not the first host that didn't know you had that.
Well, because when you're hosting a show, you want it to be as simple as I want to know where I need to press the on button, where's the microphone, and how do I adjust my headphone levels. I don't want to be responsible for anything else.
How could you not want to be, like, just for peace of mind?
No, I don't care. It's not on me.
Okay.
That's not my job.
It's not. Yeah. Yes. Not my job. Do your job. Mitch Rosen our program director, has a dump button
in his office,
as I think most PDs probably.
I don't know if they do.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
And we should go down the hall and ask Ron Gleason if he has one.
Hello, sir. Good to see you.
Yeah. Do you?
Hey,
yeah,
Ron. Question for you.
Yeah. Real
quick,
the people at
BBM. Unless your name is Mark Grody, reporting overnight. Those are not the people you got to worry about dropping bombs.
There's a lot of bleeping traffic on the inbound right now. It's a bleeping mess Kennedy.
They're wearing white collars and ties to work. They're not bleeping all over the place.
Very regimented.
Yeah, they're the professional station.
Yeah, traffic and weather together. That absolutely. But I think it's funny that we all had, because, you know, you can't swear on the radio, all of that. We could get fined. We could get in serious trouble. But we're all like, we were playing it back because it's the greatest thing in the world because a professional athlete just swore on the radio and Liam Hendricks was awesome.
He was great. And this is the reality that we're in, Mark. It's been this way since the beginning of time.
Uh-huh.
We just can't have the swearing on the air, like all over the air. You can't have it.
Yeah,
if we're on the internet, you can have it.
I can't have it. Right, right. The internet, yeah, the internet heard. If you were listening on the Odyssey app, you heard it in full.
That's true.
Yeah, if you were listening on terrestrial radio, you did not. You did not, because everybody was on it.
What is this? This is incentive to download the Odyssey app.
Ooh, very good,
and
Chris.
And listen via the Odyssey app whenever you get an opportunity, because you can hear the raw, unfiltered stuff.
Wow, I've just been told that you will be allowed in the studio the next time you do a show because of what you just said. We will not have you miles and miles away.
Yeah, that's great.
Chris, the Cubs will be in Arizona tonight, right here on 670 The Score. 8:05 pregame with Zach Zeman. 8:40, Pat and Ron will be calling the game, so you got to work for it a little bit. Then the Cubs will be at St. Louis. We all know where the Cubs are, 44-46, 8 games out of first place in the National League Central, and it began last night. As a matter of fact, it was on my watch that the first trade went down last night when I was hosting the Cubs moving Jock Peterson to Atlanta for minor league lefty first baseman Bryce Ball. If you haven't heard some of the details on him, 23 years old, ranked as Atlanta's 12th best prospect according to MLB.com, and it's been uneven for him. In 2019, he was really good. Hit .329 with a 1.023 OPS, 17 homers. Nothing last year because of the pandemic. This year, he has struggled. 53 games at high A, slash line .207, .354, .396, 6 homers, and he's striking out a ton this year. 23 years old, obviously repetition at first base because Freddie Freeman is there. But I looked at this, and this is probably not going to be the biggest trade that the Cubs make in terms of how we are grading. But it's kind of like, it's a why not trade. Jock Peterson was not going to sign, no matter what, was not going to sign a multiple-year deal with the Cubs. So in getting somebody who probably is going to need a couple years still in the minors before he becomes a big leaguer, but getting that, like a player, I think that maybe I'm still traumatized from the Yu Darvish trade where you did get a starting pitcher, but then a bunch of no-names. At least there is somewhat of a face here with a guy that we can track and maybe see at the big league level someday.
And just to touch on something you said, it kind of sounds to me, based on things that we've heard over the last several months, that some of the Cubs players were traumatized by the Yu Darvish deal.
Mm-hmm.
That they didn't want that to happen. And look, when you're a player in a clubhouse, your thought process, at least to start the season, and I know that players, as a season wears on, they get an idea of what kind of team they are, really, truly what kind of team they are. But everybody is kind of fooled into thinking early on, hey, we're going to compete and we're going to win. So when they take a piece away like that, they take that away from you, your thought process as a player is, what the hell's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Because we think we're good and we think we can win. And you kind of look as a player, you kind of have to be ignorant like that. Like you have to operate as if you believe you're as good as everybody else, if not better. Like maybe if you're a Pittsburgh Pirate, you know, or if you're playing for the Orioles, you probably have an idea. But everybody else goes into spring training thinking they can win. And I wonder how much of that at the early part of the season or before it even began, maybe sort of solidified everybody in the clubhouse, you know, kind of like everybody. Look, I don't know how much I believe in the intangible stuff, but I do think there is something to everybody in a clubhouse feeling like they're together on something and nobody else is there to help them but each other, and that maybe that does somehow translate on the field in terms of performance. So I think that maybe what happened in the first couple of months of the season is that in part fired everybody up. Like, I mean, I can't believe they let this dude go. But then ultimately, the lack of talent on the roster in certain areas is starting to, you know, materialize. Like, we're starting to see it. And I think that's such an important idea with this team, and what happened there early on maybe affected them in multiple ways where it kind of lit a fire for them, but then eventually that fire was extinguished. And I know that's not exactly what you were talking about, but it's a thought for me that I think is kind of important here when you look at the team in context.
Yeah, like the idea that they're all gonna band together and they're gonna beat their opponents, but they're also gonna win despite what upper management might be doing or what they might be thinking. But it is incredible to think that the Cubs were 11 games over 500 on June 13th. And let me know if you agree with this or not. Of course, Jed Hoyer, the Cubs president of baseball operations, hated that the Cubs lost 11 in a row. That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to lose 7 or 8 in a row. Well, maybe not. 11 in a row is embarrassing. And it got to that point, and there were some horrible things that happened along the way with that 11-game losing streak. Jed Hoyer said when he spoke recently that they had been thinking about the possibility of buying because they were in first place. And I think I believe it, but I do also think that once you get past the anguish of an 11-game losing streak, there had to be part of Jed Hoyer that was like, okay, now we know what direction to go. And I'm pretty sure that Jed Hoyer knew this was the direction that they were going to go, short of winning a World Series or doing something surprising in the postseason. And I think that this justified it. He said he was going thinking about buying. I don't know if that's true or not, because they've had these there have been crashes at the ends of seasons every single year since 2017. And you could even count 2017 if you want, where they just get crushed by the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series. So this finally gave, I think, Jed Hoyer some closure in his mind that now I know what to do, and I think that Cubs fans can act accordingly too. Now I know how to think because this team has broken my heart too many times in the last few years.
If you're the front office now and you have to deal with the fallout of everything that's happened up until the start of the season, you wanted one of two things to happen. You either wanted to be 3+ games up in the division at the deadline, or you wanted to be 5, 6, or 7 games out. You didn't want it to be like, hey, we're a game and a half,
exactly.
We're a game out, we're 2 games out. Now we really have to make a decision here of what we do. This is one of the two best possibilities for the Cubs front office. I'm not saying it's one of the two best possibilities for Cubs fans. I'm saying for the people who have to make the decision is now made for them. Like, there is nothing to discuss here. It's you get what you can. And I did shows, you know, when I think the last show I actually did, they were either a game up or they were tied for first. I think they might've been just right around. It was right around the time they pitched that no hitter against the Dodgers. And I had been advocating for weeks leading up to it. This is a team that you hang on to. If they're in first place or they're close to it, you ride this out because who knows when you're going to get back to this spot. And I said the only way you don't do this is if they're 5 games out, and they're, you know, it's way worse than that now. But it's amazing to me, even though we've been facing this reality for about a week, 2 weeks now, we know who they are, a couple of weeks. It's just amazing to me still that this is where they are now, knowing that 12 days prior they were in first place.
Yeah, and in general, they have waited too long to do this. Like, it's been, like, this last call thing has been going on for 3 years now, where Theo Epstein, in his end-of-season press conferences, when the team inevitably stopped hitting, he would say, okay, we're going to need to shake up the core. Not those exact words, but there were threats of it. You could definitely infer it from what Theo Epstein was saying, and they never did it. Everything was messed up last year because of the shortened season and things that they maybe had wanted to do, they didn't do. And so now here they are, and now they know that they have to do what they have to do. They've been forced to do it. And I think overall it's good. Once you get over the sentimental part of it, and I think Cubs fans have been pretty good about it, now it's onto the business side, and we look at the Cubs in a different way. We have, coming up at the top of the hour, Steve Stone. He will talk to us about the Chicago White Sox, some of the moves that they have made, including reinstating Aaron Bummer and recalling Reynaldo Lopez. So we'll talk to Stoney about that and hosting the Houston Astros tonight, a team that handled the White Sox back in late June. We know that Liam Hendricks doesn't give a bleep, but that's okay. We'll talk to Steve Stone about that coming up in just a little bit. And when we return to, I want to talk about Illinois State Broadcasting and something that Chris Ranji and I have in common from our days at WZND in Normal, Illinois. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Congratulations, you swept us in June. Who gives
a... Is that the Illinois State? I didn't know.
What?
I don't. I guess I didn't have that
some
much.
Redbird.
I didn't have great Redbird pride. Yeah.
Every voice proclaim, we've got the fight. We've got the might. Let's win this game. What's the matter with you?
You dork. Wow.
How the hell do you not know this, Grody?
Man, I know my high school fight song
better than
another.
That's worse.
Yeah, you're right. I was drunk.
High school?
Well, not
or in college.
The irony is I didn't drink in high school.
Me, hey, we are the same guy.
Wow, we really are.
I didn't either.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, no. My first, this is, I swear to God, my first actual full beer, I was in Sacramento, California, following our Redbirds into the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
They played against Tennessee.
Was that Mike Vandegaard?
No. That's no.
Oh yeah, I'm older.
Dan Muller.
Dan Muller,
the head coach,
yes.
The current head coach.
Uh huh.
He hit a layup with a couple of seconds left to go to put them ahead against Tennessee, and they won their round one game. Then they played Arizona, who had just won the national championship the year before, and I think they were like 2 points. They were down by two at the half, and I was like, hey. Hanging in with Arizona, and then Arizona came out in the second half, and I think they won by 50. it was a bloodbath. But anyway, while I was in Sacramento, I turned 21.
And we met
a bunch of kids from, like, you know, U of A and some of the other schools that were out there. And we all went out.
Mixer.
We went, and there were like eight of us. We all went out. And we went to a bar, and I was the only person that wasn't 21 yet, but it was the night I turned 20. So, you know, at midnight, you turn 21. And, you know, we're all brilliant college kids, and they're like, hey, here's what we're going to do. The eight of us will get in a line. You get in the middle of the line. He's going to check IDs. He's not going to look very closely at yours.
Right.
And he'll just let you in. And he did not.
he is dumb.
Yeah, he was like, no.
Okay.
And I said, well, it was like 10:30 at night. And I said, well, technically, in Illinois, it is 12:30. So I am of age. And he goes, are you kidding me?
Wow.
And I said, I thought I'd give it a shot. And he said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go in, but you can't have anything to drink until midnight. And then at midnight, he came in and he got me a beer and a mind eraser. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's a shot in like an eight ball, like a tall glass, and they put a bunch of straws in it. I don't even know what's in it. But that was my first actual drink. Was on my 21st birthday at midnight. I had a beer and a shot from a bouncer named Clint.
I don't know why, but that's really funny.
I don't either. I just know his name was Clint.
That's perfect. So, I love
Clint,
that.
If you're listening and you're in the Chicago area, thank you.
That's Chris Ranji. I'm Mark Grody. Yeah, we both went to Illinois State. We are collectively today filling in for the afternoon show of Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel, the Parkins and Spiegel show. They are off today. They'll be back on Monday. So we're just doing a little bit of ISU reminiscing. Now you got me going on a good little fake ID story. So you remember the bar, maybe it was gone by the time you got there, but there was a bar called the Cellar. No, not Rockies.
Oh, the Cellar, yeah.
Yeah, you remember the Cellar.
I didn't go to the Cellar.
Okay. Yeah. You were probably going to dance bars. I was cool. I just like to belly up at, you know, crash bars and things like that, right?
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
I like to go to bars where people were. I don't know. They were just weird.
And girls, right? No,
I don't know.
That wasn't exactly the place you'd go for that. But yeah, I'd go to Rockies at Shanigan's and all those fun places.
What about Maggie
too.
Miley's? You guys go to Maggie Miley's?
That was not there until we left.
Oh, well, you got
Maggie
out,
Miley's
man.
Is new. The pub too. That was the spot.
Oh,
everybody
still there.
Went
pub
to.
Wednesdays, was that a thing when you guys were there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
oh, yep.
No, when I was there, there was a place called Shanigan's that had dollar pitchers on Wednesday.
Best music in town because they play rock music. You know,
yeah,
so
and that place is gone. There's a train station, and whoever owned it probably dead now. So this is fine if they know. But the bartender, we would go in there for happy hour, and we would be there like on Fridays for 3 hours, and then there would be 15 of us, and she'd say, "I lost your bill."
Oh, nice.
So that guy probably lost a ton of booze and food on her. And yeah. She's great, and that guy sucks, but it does. So it doesn't matter now.
No, the pub is anyway. Still there. I actually went to the pub earlier this year. Unfortunately, I had to go to Bloomington Normal for the funeral, but we all, of course, went to the pub and had multiple baskets of cheese balls because that's the thing that you have when you go there. But anyway, back – oh, and the gallery, too. Remember the gallery? That was like the Nouveau bar. That was like the weird people bar. That was like the Cure, man, stuff like that. But anyway, at the cellar, my brother Brian had a fake ID, and that was my, because we look enough alike to where he was able to use my ID. We're only 2-3 years apart in age. So he was at the cellar. I wasn't there, so he's got my ID. He goes up to the bartender, who's a big, massive, huge guy, right? He's like literally 6'7", 3-something. He played offensive line for the Illinois State Redbirds. And so Brian, who's never had a problem using my ID as his fake ID, shows it to this guy. The guy's looking at him. He's looking at the ID, looking at him. He goes, sorry, dude, that's not you. My brother's like, oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, that's me. He's like, he gives him like the birth date and the social security number and all that stuff. He goes, no, dude, that's not you. And Brian's like kind of arguing with him. He goes, dude. He goes, I know your brother. We're in a radio class together, okay? And guess what? Guess what? He let him in. He was messing with him because he realized, oh, this is Mark Grody's brother. I know this guy. And we were in a radio production class together.
I had a friend who also used his brother's ID. I won't disclose his name just in case, but like... The first time I actually met my friend's brother, then I thanked him because that's the only way we were able to buy booze for 2 years in college.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's awesome.
I was like, hey, man, I owe you one.
That's awesome. I know we got to take a break, right?
Yeah.
Let's take the break, and we'll talk about my fake ID story, which isn't even my ID story.
Good, because we haven't even scratched the surface because you're in the Snink and Redbird Hall of Fame. I'm not.
There's a reason for that.
We both think our professor hated us, so we'll have to explore that a little bit later on as well. But we do not want to be late for Steve Stone, who will, again, give us direction and talk about the White Sox, who host Houston tonight. Stoney is next on the Parkins and Spiegel Show with Ron Giangrodi on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.